Amen. All right. Thank you so much. Appreciate that. I'm just wanted to start off by saying thank you for Tony for asking me to preach, and those staff meetings in the 90s were had indelible marks on and I like to think that I'm carrying a lot of the great things that I learned from there to the church here in Detroit. Before I get into my lesson, I just want to give a quick shout out to some old friends. I want to say hi to Marty and Rita out in Halifax, Howard and Karen, back in the old days in the 90s in Toronto, Sean and Joyce McDonnell, how you guys doing? And my old friend Nick Alavetz-Savitas. Nick, I believe, was converted in the fall of 1998. He would not leave our household, so we studied the Bible with him for 3 days straight, and he got baptized. So, Nick, miss you, and just great to know that you're in Ottawa. Want to introduce my family. I don't know how well you guys can make out that picture, but the one on the left, it's my middle son. He is the largest human being in my house. He plays football for his high school. And over beside him is me. That beautiful creature in the middle is my wife of 20 years. Beside her is my oldest son, Ethan. And for those of you that have known me for a while, if you can believe it, in September, he's going to be going to college and starting his first year at the campus ministry, which is crazy because now things have come full circle, because I was in my first year of university when I became a disciple. And now I have a son that is going to his first year of university. And then on the far right is my youngest son, Bryce, who turned 13 in March. So I have three teenage boys, if you can believe it. The title of my lesson this morning is Journey. And, you know, if you have been a disciple for 1 year or 27 years, you know this truth that God reveals himself to us in many ways, through his son, through his word, through his spirit, through other people, through leaders in your life. But he also reveals his truth to us through our journey. And I specifically wanted to speak about the Luke 15 parable of the prodigal son. And I chose this text for two reasons. One, this particular passage has meant different things to me through my own journey. You know, that's the amazing thing about the Word of God, that you can read a verse and it can mean so much to you at one point in your life. And then at another point in your life, that same verse, those same words can have a profoundly deeper meaning. And the other reason I chose this passage actually is because that there are three characters in this parable. There is a son, there is a father, and there's a brother. And I am all three of those. So I can relate to all three characters. And like I said, each person, each in this parable has particular resonance for me. Now, I'm sure most of us, if not all, I was learning so many new things. And I had this routine, and that routine prompted me to have healthy habits and grow. But when you get older, sometimes those habits actually prevent you from growing. And so you need breakthroughs. You need different ways to look at things. And so I want to look at the son and look at kind of how he had his breakthrough and some of the things that can maybe help us in our walk with God. In verse 17, it says, when he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have food to spare? And here I am, starving to death. First of all, I want to say we've all had moments where we've been out of our minds, where we look back and we would think, what was I thinking? Or if somebody were to say, hey, bro, what were you thinking that time when you did that? You know, what were you thinking when you raised your voice at your lovely wife? What were you thinking when you were losing your temper that time? And a lot of us, we just say, I have no idea. We've all had these out of our mind moments. But what's different about us is how we respond when we come back to our senses. And it says, when he came to his senses, what did he say to him? He said, here I am, starving to death. And it seems so simple. But I really believe breakthrough starts with a simple, honest evaluation of where you're at. You know, I remember one time in high school, I was teasing one of my friends, good friend of mine. We're still friends to this day. His name's Edbert. And we recently just got in contact with each other just to say hi. But I was teasing him and he turned around and punched me. And I remember just being so flabbergasted. You know, we're like, you know, just, I think I was 11th grade and I tackled him and we just started wrestling each other and we were both so angry. And for about 2 weeks, we didn't talk. In fact, we talked about each other. We would say, I would just tell my friends, I can't believe this guy. You know, I just, a little joke and then he punches me. And, you know, I was trying to get friends to take my side and just being a kid. And eventually we made up and, you know, we apologized to each other. But, you know, one of the things that I'd realized is I had told everyone that I teased him a little bit and then he kind of punched me. But that wasn't really the truth. You see, the truth was I had been bugging him and teasing him about things that he asked me not to bug him about for weeks. See, I had changed the narrative because I didn't want people to think that I was the one at fault. I changed the narrative because I wanted to justify the way that I had behaved. But you see, at some point when I got some distance from that situation, I had to look at it and go, listen, Edward didn't just lose his temper for no reason. I was out of line. And you see this son here, is he saying, here I am starving to death. I've seen and known people that were unwilling to face the reality of their situation. But if we're going to have breakthrough, we got to have honesty. You know, it goes on and he says, I will set out, go back to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I love this passage. It reminds me of another passage, actually, in Proverbs 19. I'm not going to turn there. I'm just going to quote it. It said, Proverbs 19, verse 3, it says, a man's folly ruins his own life, but his heart rages against the Lord. What ruins our own life? Our foolishness. And I really believe that an important ingredient to breakthrough is taking responsibility for our lives. During the last couple months, I've had the chance to read a couple books on anger, and it's very convicting. And I think one of the things that, you know, if you struggle with getting upset or getting frustrated, or, you know, maybe you struggle with the kindness of your words, one of the questions one of the books asked was, why do you get angry? And I think for initially the answer is always, well, I got angry because of what he said, or I got angry because of the way they behaved, and I got angry because of this. And we all have a reason for why we're angry. But then the book challenges people to think, stop for a second. That's not why we're angry. Because there are so many people that go through the same situation and don't respond in anger. So the question again is, why are you angry? And when I was forced to delve a little deeper into my anger, the reason that I'm angry is often because of my selfish expectations. Or it's because I justify lacking self-control. If you're going to have breakthrough, you got to be honest and you got to take responsibility. You know, there's a modern term that's evolved in the last 20 years in counseling. It's this term, self-awareness. And it's really just this. And there's two layers to self-awareness. It's knowing yourself, obviously, but then it's also knowing how you treat others. It's knowing the effect that you have on other people. And as someone who counsels hundreds of people, I can tell you that self-awareness is only attained when you take responsibility for how you treat others around you. Because when you lack self-awareness, you undermine your own influence and relationships. You see, you can't move forward, church, in your relationships. You won't move forward in your leadership. You won't move forward in your life until you get some self-awareness, because without self-awareness, when you are undermining your own credibility, haven't we all seen that person that is so opinionated, is so upset, so furious, and yet they are undermining their own credibility because they don't see who they are? How do I get self-awareness? Be completely honest with yourself, with God, with others, and take responsibility for your actions. You know, the son goes on to say, I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants. So he got up and went to his father. And I think this is a third step, to a very important step to having a breakthrough. Is, yeah, you have to be honest. Yes, you have to take responsibility. But then three, you have got to be willing to embrace a low position. He said, make me like one of your servants. And about a couple of years ago, I was at a church leaders retreat, and we had a scheduled to have a working lunch at the restaurant in the hotel. And so they had us fill out our lunch orders beforehand and put our names on it. Like, okay, I want the tuna salad, and I want the, you know, the burger with mushrooms. And we handed it in. And then we all met at the restaurant in the hotel. And there was two waiters there. There were two Latino waiters that didn't speak English well. And they were, you know, slowly looking through all these orders and trying to, they didn't know, you know, which order belonged to which person, because they didn't know everyone. So I quickly stood up. And I grew up in a restaurant, like a lot of my parents were Asian immigrants, and so they owned a restaurant, so that was kind of how I grew up. And so I was kind of in my honey hole, so I started helping people out. I put on an apron, and everyone was having a good chuckle out of it. I was serving people, and I was like, you know, and I was helping these guys out. They liked it. We were high-fiving each other, and then something kind of funny happened. And that is, one of the customers on the you know, nearby the section where we were, where I was serving people, thought that I was one of the waiters for the restaurant, and said, excuse me, young man, can you get me some water? And so, you know, I did. And again, everyone's having a chuckle about it. And then I eventually just, you know, sat down. Once all the food was served, I sat down. And but then when I had gone to the restroom once, that lady and her party, again, kind of hailed me and asked me for some other things, like, can you get me some napkins, please? And so, again, it's not a big deal. So, you know, I just kind of accommodated it. And again, everyone's, you know, some of the disciples are noticing this and kind of having a good chuckle at my expense. And then I sat down and I was involved in a conversation. And again, she, you know, she hailed me and said, we haven't gotten our food. At this point, the joke's kind of over. And actually, I'm a little bit, you know, I'm getting a little annoyed because I'm kind of immersed in my own conversation. And so I eventually just talk to the waiters, hey, that lady needs her thing. And you can kind of see the frustration on my face at this point. I sit down. My friend Dave Jung says something to me, and he kind of chuckles, and he leans in and he says, everybody likes being a servant until you're treated like one, huh? Everybody likes being a servant until we're treated like one. And I think it's so important that for us to continue to grow and to continue to have breakthroughs, that we embrace this role of servant. I think we know it here. We like to be a servant until it challenges how we are treated. Let's look at the dad. You know, his son comes and it says, at the end of this verse, it says, so he got up and went to his father. And it says, but while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. Few things are as transformative as being a parent. And, you know, many of, you know, the friends that I shared, not all of them, they knew me before I was married and certainly before I was a parent. But one of the most profound impact that having a kid has, for most people, a child is the first person that you love more than yourself. Because even in young marrieds, honestly, for the first 3 to 4 years, typically the marriage, it's still a very selfish love is what most marriages kind of discover. But when you have a child, you just not only love this individual with all your heart, but you have this transformative experience that you said, I would die for this person. That my dreams, I don't care if they're crushed, if dreams of this individual can come true. And so here's this father, and it says that he saw his son while he was still a long way off and was filled with compassion. Now, I can't imagine what this dad was going through when his son was squandering his wealth in sin. It's such a painful thing to imagine. But what I do know that for myself, one of the things that I've had to learn as a dad is that I can't fix people. I can only love them. And maybe as a parent, you've tried this, or we try to do this as Christians. We try to fix our spouse. We try to fix our friends. We try to fix our church. A couple of years ago, I drive a Kia Sedona van. I've had it for 10 years. And about 5 years ago, something happened in the driver's side van door that all the electrical power went out. And the van was functioning fine, but the particular, I drove my van side door, like then the locks wouldn't work and the windows wouldn't work, right? It's just, that was the only, just all the electricity in that door wouldn't work, which was fine until one day like a couple days into it, I had to go get some gasoline. And the door that opens, the button that opens my gasoline door is on the driver's side door. And so I started, I was like, uh-oh, here I am. And I'm like, what? I can't open it. And, I'm at a gas station and I'm just trying to open it. And eventually another guy comes and say, hey buddy, what's going on? Let me see. And, if I can help. And he's trying to help. And he's like, nah, you got to bust it open with a screwdriver. I happen to have a screwdriver in my car. So he said, yeah, there's a little lock there. You just got to jam it open. It's going to dent the car a bit. It's going to look a little scratchy, but that's the only way to get it open. And just at that time, my wife calls me. And I told her, I said, honey, we're going to have to dent our beautiful van. I can't, she knew about the electricity. And she said, well, why don't you call the manufacturer at Kia? And I thought, what a horrible idea. An idea that only a wife would suggest to a husband. And she's like, honey, I'm going to speak to somebody in the Philippines and they're going to put me on hold for an hour and no one's going to know what to do. And we're kind of having a little bit of an argument. And I just said, okay, whatever. I just hung out, we hung out. I got off the phone and I'm getting my screwdriver ready. And then she texts me the manufacturer's number to Kia. And so anyways, I don't know what possessed me, but I called it. And I said, hey, the electricity on my driver's side door is out and I can't open my gas tank. And he said, yeah, I can help you. There's a release switch in the back. Just follow my instructions. So you go open the trunk. Yeah, do you see a secret panel? I pulled it out. He goes, yes, do you see a pull cord? I pulled it and my gas tank was open. And of course, things are hard when you don't know what you're doing, but they're easy when you do know what you're doing. But, I was prepared to destroy, to break my gas panel open for lack of understanding. And I think so many of us do that with the people that we love, that we hurt our family, we hurt our friends. We're taking a screwdriver and trying to break a friendship open. But we just lack understanding. What I admire about the father in this parable is that he had the wisdom and the patience to keep the relational connection with his son. And he knew that some things are only learned through the journey. And he knew that his son had to go on a journey. And that's what I admire so much about this father. it goes on in this passage. It says, of course, the older brother saw the party that the father had for the second son and kind of gets a little bit of an attitude. In verse 28, we pick it up. It says, the older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, look, all these years I've been slaving for you and you never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. I got a question for you. Do you think this son was angry last week? The week before? Probably not. Probably not, right? In fact, I'm going to venture and say he was happy as a button. Siblings, it's a complicated relationship, isn't it? I often describe siblings as people that you love so much, but often there's not a lot of respect in that relationship. But you love them. And here's this older brother, and one of the inevitable things about having a sibling is whether you, even though you're told not to, they often become a gauge, a measurement in which you compare your own life. And of course, your parents will say, hey, you know what? We love you all individually. You're all so different. Just run your own race. But it's so easy to compare ourselves and to compare the measurement of our life. Am I a success? Hey, if I'm more successful than my siblings, I'm a success. If I'm less successful than my siblings, well, then I'm a failure. And it's very natural and very wrong, but we compare our lives to those around us. You know, I remember we had a house in Newmarket, Ontario, and we sold it, about 16 years ago when we moved to the States. And then I bought a house in America in 2007. And America then went through a crash. And we ended up selling that house 10 years later for like $30,000 less than what we bought it. And the house that we sold in Newmarket was worth three times what we sold it for. And it was easy to look back and go, oh my gosh. And it was easy to look back and to use a financial filter to evaluate my life. Bible says, cast but a glance at riches. You see, you know what's a great test for us, church? It's a great test for all of our hearts is when we see other people prosper. Can we rejoice with them and for them? Tests reveal what's in our hearts, and tests develop us. That's what a test does, right? When you take a test, it reveals where you're at, and it continues to develop who you are. And one test for each and every one of us is, man, how do you feel when you see that brother or the other disciple down the road doing great spiritually, doing great financially, your sibling? Tests reveal and develop. And one of the challenges for us is to not compare ourselves to the world, to compare our finances, compare our marriages, compare our children. Everyone needs to run the race that's marked out for us. Comparison is the enemy of contentment. I want to close off and ask you guys a couple questions. And that is, what journey are you on? You see, there's a highway near Detroit called the 94, near where I live. And if you take I-94, Interstate 94 West, it will in fact lead you to Chicago because that's where that road leads. So if you're on that road and you're traveling on it and you don't get off that road, I'm going to tell you right now, you're going to end up in Chicago. That's where that road leads. And some of us, we're on a journey to bitterness because you have a narrative that is not honest. You are not taking responsibility for the sin in your life. And that journey leads to somewhere. You will end up somewhere. Not because I can tell the future, but that's because I know that's where that road leads. Some of us are on a journey to wisdom. See, not all journeys give people wisdom, but if you are willing to have breakthrough, if you're willing to embrace the role of a servant, low position, if you're willing to have the patience of the Father, that you're not trying to fix people, you're trying to love them, and willing to let them go on their journey, and yet still keep the connection despite the sin they might be in. Well, that journey leads to, I believe, reparation and godly resolution. Some of us are on a journey to some bitter roots because we are comparing ourselves. We are frustrated. We are angry. That road doesn't lead anywhere good. That doesn't lead anywhere good. You know, I love this parable because I can relate as a son that I need to have breakthrough. That even though he was in so much sin, man, it doesn't matter where you've been. It's about what you've overcome as a disciple. I relate to the father and to my shame. This guy is a template for us dads in terms of the patience and humility we ought to show. And of course, I relate as a brother, being selfish and jealous and needing to repent of this attitude where I compare myself to others. So church, thank you guys so much for your time. So grateful for my friendship with the Sings and their inspiration over the years, their leadership. And I hope that me sharing my journey and looking at the journey of these people has helped you in your journey. Thank you so much.